You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. We're going to be talking outdoor issues regarding Minnesota and around the country for the next 1 hour. We will have Tony Peterson with us, and we'll talk some summer fishing with Tony. Then we'll have Charlotte Roy from the Minnesota DNR. Charlotte joins us. I think this is like the third year in a row we've had Charlotte on to talk about the rough grouse situation. We got the annual survey back from the Minnesota DNR. Looks like herd numbers will be down a bit across the region this year, and that's not unexpected given the cycle that rough grouse go through, but we'll get more details from Charlotte here in about a half hour. Kicking it off with our buddy Tim Lesmeister, who's up on Lake Superior. Tim, you got the dock in. You're ready to ply the waters of Gitche-Gumee, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I know the lake trout are out on the mud right now. I can always tell when the trout fishing is going to be real good in deep water on the mud when I start seeing the mayfly husks floating on the surface. Fortunately, a few days ago, we had some calm water, which is kind of unusual up here on Lake Superior. And I saw the mayfly husks. I've seen some mayflies on the window screens. And now I know that it's going to be out to the mud for me. When these bugs start moving out of the mud, you get, you know, the smelt and the herring, and they move in to start feeding on the bugs. And the lake trout just moved right in on those smelt. It's all about the big, shiny silver spoons, and occasionally I'll throw on a spin and glow. I don't catch the bigger fish with the spin and glow, but that's okay. Since I'm fishing around the Apostle Islands, I'm only allowed one over 25 inches and only two fish, so I want to get that one keeper that's under 25 as well. And sometimes to do that, you got to downsize, and I'll usually do that with a spin and glow, so I'm ready to get out of the mud right now and chase some of those lake trout.
Did you see Ron Husfett wrote a piece in the latest Outdoor News, Fishing for Lake Trout on Lake Superior, off the Michigan coast, the Upper Peninsula? He gets out with his old Finlander uncle by marriage, and they do something called bobsticking. I thought it was fairly interesting. I know it's something you've ever tried, Tim?
Only once, and I'll never do it again as long as I live. This is a lot of work. Let me tell you, bobsticking is work. Big jigs, you're fishing very deep water, sometimes, yeah, you know, a couple hundred feet deep.
Right.
And you're vertical jigging, basically, although there's always current in these lakes, so you're never straight down. You always got a little bit of an angle. So it's really tough. You got to maintain a bit of contact with the bottom, and it's really hard to tell. Now bobsticking's gotten easier with the braided lines, the super lines, because
they touch through the water, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can use a pretty light diameter line. These small diameters will get that lure down, and the feel is so much better. But I'm telling you, you're basically, this is not a rod and a reel thing.
Right.
You're using a piece of wood that the line is wrapped around that you got. It's almost like got a handle, and you're just basically pumping that arm and keeping that jig working. And when you get a fish, it's like pulling them in with a tip up. You got a couple hundred feet of line up there, and you're hand over hand bringing in these trout, and I never again am I going to do that. But I'll tell you what, if you can, at least do it once.
Sure.
Just so that you can say you did.
Yeah, well, a lot of fishing going on right now, obviously, hot weather, but the fish are snapping. I hope people are getting out there and enjoying fishing like Tim just described. But we've got a sad note regarding fishing in Minnesota, Tim. Monday morning, well, you know what? I heard about it Sunday night. Some of my contacts with MinFish were letting me know. And then we had a story at OutdoorNews.com this past Monday, the 6th. It was everywhere by the 7th. But we lost Tom Newstrom. Tom, a fishing guide out of the Grand Rapids area, retired law enforcement, had been a cop down in Chicago, then was a investigator officer in the Grand Rapids, Itasca County Sheriff's Department, I guess, for I think 26 years he worked there. Also a fishing guide in retirement. I didn't realize Tom was as old as he was. I thought Tom was maybe in his 60s, but I guess he was 77. I still think that's too young. I'm not exactly sure what happened. It's my understanding Tom had had some heart issues. He'd been losing some weight. He looked good, really good the last time I saw him. But I don't know. It sounded like he died in his sleep, was taking a nap last Sunday. And it was just Tom's time. Hall of Famer, where do you start with him? I'll let you talk to him. Just a remarkable friend to fishing in this part of the world.
Well, if you want to start with him, let's start with his days as a Chicago cop. This is an interesting story that he told me when we were ice fishing up on Lake Winnebogoches years ago. We were catching perch. He told me he'd been a cop in Chicago. I said, boy, that's a tough beat, isn't it? And he said, yeah. He said, you know, I was shot down there. And I go, really? Tell me about it. He didn't mind telling the story. Him and his partner pulled over a car, and as he was inspecting the car, walking around doing a car inspection, when he heard this pop, and this guy in the car had a parole violation, and he had shot his partner in the head, killed him instantly. And then as Newsom ran around to see what was going on, this guy stepped out of the car and shot Newsom three times. Newsom dropped to the ground, and this guy ran into an alley. Newsom basically got up, followed him into the alley. They had a shootout. Newsom didn't get hit by any other bullets, but he was wounded very badly. He crawled back to his car, couldn't actually get into his vehicle. A child, some, you know, probably a 6 or 7 year old that was there, actually got into the police car, grabbed the microphone and handed it to Newstrom, and he was able to call for help. The ambulance arrived. They took him to the hospital. They saved his life. He still has had a .38 caliber slug beneath his breastbone. It carried that all of his life. And he was on the Chicago force 8 more years after that, believe it or not, and worked his way up into the narcotics division as a detective. But he got so burned out, he finally said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And that's when he decided he was going to start doing some guiding, Lake Geneva, then moved up into the Northwoods, Grand Rapids area, Itasca County, where he got on as a sheriff there. An excellent law enforcement officer by everybody's standards, and just an amazing individual. I knew him because he was on Gary Roach's fishing team. I fished with him many, 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 many times, open water and ice both. But one of the things that struck me about Newstrom was that it wasn't just about fishing with him. It was about making sure that the resources that we had for fishing were always maintained well. He was always involved in just about every aspect of that, governmentally and through organizations. And he was also very interested in making sure that young people were always involved as well. And Newstrom was just everything there possibly could be when it was the fishing resources involved. So what a great guy. I mean, I tell you that Newstrom's passing has really affected a lot of people. And it's been just all over the social media sites, and I think it will be for a while.
Rob Dreeslein and Tim Lesmeister here, remembering Tom Newstrom, who passed away last Sunday at the age of 77. Freshwater Fishing Hall of Famer, I believe was it 2015 that the Hall inducted him, Tim, as well as a Minnesota Fishing Hall of Famer. I'm sure he made a great cop because he was a real patient guy. He seemed to like people, you know. Tom was always willing to help anyone. He was on, you named the DNR committee involving fish. Tom was on it at one point. He was a relentless volunteer. He was always working to introduce people to the sport. He was on MinFish. That's the nonprofit organization that's working to advance fishing and improve fishing here in Minnesota. He was one of the founders of that organization. I was on the board for a while, too. Tom was at every meeting, very positive, always trying to solve problems. I don't know that there was another better example of Mr. Fishing in terms of advocacy and involvement than Tom Nystrom. I mean, there's guys like Gary Roach and other, you know, really good sticks out there that we associate with Minnesota fishing. But in terms of just being immersed in fishing culture and fishing public policy, just as a volunteer, I don't know that anyone comes close to Tom Nystrom.
I agree. I honestly find that Nystrom was one of those individuals that, you know, I think he maybe got 2 hours of sleep a day with right. all of the stuff that he was involved in. But he was an amazing fisherman and an amazing individual. One more thing about this story I told earlier about him having this altercation with this individual and being shot. A statement that he made when he was telling me this story just literally sent shivers up my spine because after he was actually shot three times and he was laying on the ground and this guy got out of his car, he actually put the gun to Nystrom's head and pulled the trigger. And all he heard was a click. All Nystrom heard was a click. The gun was out of bullets. Think about that. It was one of those situations where, you know, you figure it's over for me, but by the grace of God, the gun was literally out of bullets. And to think that getting through that and then becoming what he did, I mean, that could wreck a person pretty easily, but not Nystrom, man. This guy just basically became someone that just literally continued to work in law enforcement and yet created a career for himself, helping people and basically helping to maintain the resources that we all love and cherish here in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, very well put. I traded some texts with DNR Commissioner Sarah Strowman. I asked her for a quote, which she did provide to Outdoor News. I know Sarah was hit really hard by this. She was close with Tom. She'd worked with him on a number of DNR roundtables. She said, Tom was more than an exceptional angler. He was a dedicated champion for Minnesota's fisheries and the people who care for them. His unwavering stewardship, generosity, and the example he set as a role model will be deeply missed and long remembered at DNR and across Minnesota. There will be a memorial service for Tom. We found that out on Tuesday. I was able to get that in the print edition of this week's Outdoor News, Tim. It's going to be Sunday, August 9th, 1 p.m., Timberlake Lodge Event Center in Grand Rapids. Visitation beforehand. You can learn more at Roe Funeral Home and Crematorium.com if anyone wants details and wants
to. That's going
to
be,
it's going to be
a packed audience at that one. I'll tell you right now that's going to be standing room only. You better get there early if you want to. Dedicate a little time to the remembrance of Tom Nystrom because people are going to be coming around literally from all over the country to remember Tom and all that he did. And all
you're right. He guided people from probably the entire country who had experiences
everywhere.
With him. Yeah. It was just really shocking. Tom just seemed like one of those guys that was going to be at the DNR roundtable shaking things up, working on behalf of fishing forever, and to lose him so suddenly, it really shook the fishing community in the state and nation this past week. So rest in peace, our dear friend Tom Nystrom. Timmy, let's grab a break. You'll return at the end of the show, and we'll hit some other topics, huh?
I sure will.
Tim Lesmeister, don't go away. We're going to talk with Tony Peterson when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
You don't hunt ducks because it's easy. You hunt because it's earned. When the first flock locks up over the decoys, that's why you do it. This July 24th through the 26th, the grind meets its tribe in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo presented by Hevy. 3 days of nothing but waterfowl, gear, proven rigs, calling competitions, real strategy, no fluff. Get your tickets now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Duck season doesn't start in October. It starts here.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Retay USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Retay's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RetayUSA.com.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Appreciate you tuning in. Check us out online at outdoornews.com if you like the content here, or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions. A gentleman who joins me a couple times a year is our friend Tony Peterson. You can read what he's got cooking at themeateater.com, but he lives here in Minnesota. He's a longtime friend, and I appreciate him carving out some time to chat about what's happening this summer. Always associate Tony with talking deer. Maybe we'll talk about some whitetail topics next week, Tony, but you're doing some fishing content for Meat Eater these days.
I'm doing a lot of fishing lately, and I tell you what, when I was younger, I kind of wanted to do two things. I wanted to be an outdoor writer, and I wanted to get paid to fish. And both of those things have happened for me, and they've opened my eyes to being careful what you wish for. I actually kind of, I spent so much time fishing in the last couple of weeks that I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind getting out of the boat for a little while and going to do something on land, which is a crazy thing to complain about.
I had a buddy who was a tournament fisherman, pretty hardcore for a couple of years. And then he and I went out just fishing one day, and he's like, this is so great. Just fishing for fun.
Oh, man.
Didn't feel like work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did the same thing to myself with tournaments and the whole scene a long time ago. And then kind of really backed off of fishing for a while till my daughters were old enough to go when they were, you know, 3 or 4. And that just like reignited the spark. Like it was like, I remembered why I love fishing. And ever since then, I think about it a lot. And now I can feel myself creeping into that dangerous territory, filming a bunch of content for fishing where I'm like, man, you got to remember why you love this and keep doing that for fun.
I always considered Minnesota the top fishing state until I spent some time in Florida and realized just how fishing crazy they are down in Florida. But I don't want to badmouth this region because it is freshwater. We don't have saltwater, but we've really got a diversity of different types of fishing that I think we take for granted. We've got great lakes. We've got stream trout. We've got, you know, warm water where you can grow big bass. And then, of course, we got all our cold water opportunities in the north for walleyes and lake trout. There's a lot of different types of fishing within 4 hours of the Twin Cities.
Minnesota's incredible. I mean, the upper Midwest is kind of unreal. And I think about that a lot because, you know, here in Minnesota, you know, we lost our moose hunting quite a few years ago, 2011, 2012, whenever that got shut down.
And we should get that back, by the way, but that's a whole other topic.
Right, right. But we don't have, you know, a lot of variety for hunting compared to a lot of states. But when it comes to fishing, we have, you know, tiny little stream trout all the way up to, you know, the biggest water you'd want to get on pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, Lake Superior's 2.5-3 hours from the Twin Cities. And then Lake Michigan is what, 5, 5.5, 6 hours. And there's phenomenal big water trout and salmon on Lake Michigan. We've got some great advertisers at Outdoor News that attract people from Minnesota, some of their best customer base, because Minnesotans love to fish. You know, we didn't even talk about musky fishing, and that was part of what you just recorded from for the Meat Eater, was some musky fishing in northern Wisconsin.
I'm primarily a bass guy. I love bass fishing. I'm allergic to fish, so I can't eat walleyes and crappies. And so I've always just been drawn to something I can cast for, especially something that'll blow up on the surface. But muskies have been, I've kind of ignored them. I've caught some, and, you know, they're super cool, but I just spent some time actually targeting them, and oh man, I had some really long, frustrating days on the water, like dark to dark, where I'd get one follow in the entire day. And then I had one day that I caught three, and it kind of reminded me of how I've sort of dabbled in the waterfowl world. Like, I love to duck hunt, but I'm not like a hardcore duck hunter, because I always feel like if you want to be that, you're not going to be in a tree stand and not going to be doing a lot of other stuff. And I've always felt like musky fishing sort of that level of commitment, but I can feel myself being drawn to it.
Now, Tony, I'm curious, were you using forward-facing sonar when you were musky fishing? Because that has dramatically altered the musky fishing paradigm in Minnesota and Wisconsin and,
right,
and everywhere.
So, no, and that was intentional. When we were kind of working on the concept of this series and going through, you know, how to make some fishing content that was compelling, I was like, I don't want to be staring
at a screen.
Yeah. And it didn't, you have to kind of weigh it out and go, yeah, there are quite a few people out there with forward facing sonar, but our primary audience isn't there yet. And I didn't want to just use that. Like, I wanted to go figure out different bodies of water without having that crutch, kind of. And so we intentionally decided not to use it. And that whole scope and world that's going to be an issue for a whole while, I think. And I don't know where they're going to resolve it. I don't know, you know, there's a lot of states are looking at it. I mean, even you look down in Florida with the tarpon situation, they're getting real worried about the resource already, because those fish down there have no place to rest.
Sure.
And then, you know, it's a parallel to musky fishing in a lot, yep, of ways.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know where it's going to end up. And I really don't, like, truly don't know where I stand on it yet.
Yeah. I don't have a ton of saltwater experience. I hadn't thought about the tarpon fishery. You think of the ocean as being so vast, but you stop and pause and, you know, they're on these flats, right? And they're just laying out there just like muskies are in our lakes. They're probably very, very easy to target with forward facing sonar.
Yeah. And you know, where they live and how they travel and feed is just primed for it.
Sure.
You know, and when you look at, I don't know, I mean, when you look at how the Bassmaster Classic played out this year with Dylan Nutt winning it and how he won it, I mean, that was entirely predicated on forward-facing sonar and, yeah, finding big largemouth, mm-hmm, loafing around at the base of a tree trunk somewhere. And the generation of fishermen coming up through that, they're gonna only know that. So I'm always like, my inclination is that this is not going to be good for the resource, and I'm not necessarily stoked about that. But I wasn't raised with this stuff. And, you know, right, the cycle of technology is that, you know, us old guys we complain, and, you know, the rest of the users just adopt it, and they only know that. And I'm like, is that happening here? But I keep going back to the resource thing. You know, I feel the same way with, like, you know, some of the trail camera bans out west on public land, and, you know, how that's playing out. And I always look at it and go, if you can prove to me that that's a resource issue, I'm all over it. Like, I'm all on board, because if we're killing X amount of more, whatever, critters because of it, or, you know, the mortality of muskies in the summer is, you know, has 3x'd because of this, then it's like, okay, let's do something about this. And so I don't know where I fall on this scoping thing yet. Like, I don't know how bad it's going to be for the resource, or if I'm just old school, but I feel like it's going to have an impact.
It is very popular with the young guys, who would just, I think, shake their heads at this conversation,
right,
Tony, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's also my understanding that some of the ratings for some of these tournament fishing shows have declined, because no one wants to watch people staring at their screens. That's just less compelling television. So, we've talked a lot about forward-facing sonar here on the program. But you're listening to Outdoor News Radio, by the way. I'm Rob Gerisine. We're talking with Tony Peterson from TheMeatEater.com. So you fished in Wisconsin for muskies. I'm curious, how would you compare muskie fishing in Wisconsin to Minnesota? There's a lot more lakes over there that have muskies in them, I believe, correct? Do you have much Minnesota muskie fishing experience?
I have some. And, you know, I have some here and some there. And yeah, there seem to be a lot of lakes and a lot of flowages and river systems that have them. And there's definitely a good culture of it over there. But you see that around some of our top lakes as well. Mm-hmm. But man, I saw a lot of people fishing muskies, but I also caught some and had a blast doing it. And I think that's one of those things. I mean, part of my goal with that show was to show that they're kind of a little more accessible than we lead on, right? You know, mm-hmm. I look at muskies. I think the closest parallel is the trophy hunting for whitetail thing, right? Where the industry wants you to believe that there's like a really big buck is almost so hard for you to get that you have to buy into it with a bunch of gear and stuff. Like it's kind of built around, the whole industry is built around it, right? And so it sort of makes it feel like it's unavailable to people who don't have the time or the money or whatever. And muskie fishing sort of feels like that. You know, you see people with 8.5 foot rods throwing $40 topwaters and bucktails. And like, it has that vibe of exclusive, but there's fish, you know? And so I kind of went out with the idea that I'm like, I'm going to take my bass gear and I'm going to go, you know, scale down a lot of my offerings. I did throw a lot of muskie stuff, but I definitely like err on the side of smaller. And I just want to show like these fish are out there, and like that experience kind of opened my eyes, and I'm planning to bring my daughters back over there because my daughters have never caught a muskie. Mm. And like, we're going to go target muskies. And you know, if they caught a 30 inch muskie, they would lose their minds, right? Like they don't need a 50 inch muskie. And I know, especially the walleye crowd doesn't like them. Like, you know, they eat all the walleyes. Like I know there's like that component of it, but I just think they're so cool, you know? And the last little bit of fishing I did in that country, I found some crappies that were just staged up. So I picked up a little swim bait and I was banging on these crappies on a deep weed line. And at one point I set the hook on one, and a really good muskie, probably mid 40s, came just shooting out of the depths. And he made 3 passes at that crappie in like half a second. I mean, it was just when you see a big predator do their thing, it is wild. And he ended up grabbing that crappie, you know, broke me off. And then he swam up beside my boat and just kind of finned there with that crappie kind of dog boned in his mouth sideways. And
taunted?
I was just looking
at him. Did he taunt you, Tony?
Oh my God. I was like, that was so cool. You know, I mean, just like, just to see that, you know. And I know from where I was fishing, I watched multiple guys go by and throw to that. It was a sunken island with a weed line on it, like a very obvious spot. And that dude was sitting there and he let everybody else go by. And as soon as a crappie was, you know, showing signs of distress in front of him, it just tripped it. And it was just like, boom, such an impressive display.
We're about out of time here, Tony, but one last fishing note. You were also on the Mississippi River. You got into some multi-species fishing. I wrote about the great northern pike fishing on the river right now. It sounds like you encountered a little bit of that too.
Man, the quality of northerns down there is unreal. You know what I mean? I think the fishing opportunity on the Mississippi River, if you start maybe at, you know, pools 3 or 4 and go down, you know, even to Prairie du Chien and pass there down in Wisconsin, the opportunity is incredible and the quality is just nuts. But those northerns, that pike situation is like a special deal because it, you know how it is. It got pretty hard to find a, you know, 30, 32 inch plus pike in a lot of lakes for a long mm-hmm. time. You know, like you kind of had to work for it. And down there on the river, those mid 30s fish, they seem real common, you know, and I mean, not like super common, but you can definitely run into them. And if you're targeting them and you know what you're doing, it's just a neat opportunity.
It's great fishing. Well, Tony, like I said, I'm out of time, but we'll come back next week. We'll talk deer.
Absolutely.
Deer and dodge maybe a little bit. All right. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, man.
That was Tony Peterson. Check him out at themeateater.com. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The Woodstock for Hunters Huntstock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Huntstock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species. Filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points. All before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline with you for another second. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check us out online at outdoornews.com. If you like the content of this broadcast, you can read everything else we've got cooking at the website or in our print version. You can subscribe to that there or call 800-535-5191. Again, you can also do it all at outdoornews.com. Hey, we got the DNR's annual grouse survey report early this past week, and we reported some of the details on that in this week's edition of Outdoor News. But right now, we've got Charlotte Roy with us. Charlotte is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Grouse Project Leader, and we're going to drill into this annual report. It's very important for folks that love to chase rough grouse. Charlotte, thanks for joining me. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Rob. I'm doing very well. I appreciate you having me here today.
Yeah, Charlotte is out of Grand Rapids, the heart of rough grouse country here in Minnesota. Charlotte, this survey gets conducted every spring. It's a drumming count survey. Tell us what drumming counts are and tell us exactly, roughly, when the survey occurs.
Well, the drumming survey is conducted in late April, early May throughout rough grouse range. And basically, we have lots of cooperators from about 13 different organizations that volunteer and help us to count the number of drums at stops that are approximately every 1 mile on routes throughout the forested region. And so these drums, the sound that the rough grouse make when they beat their wings in rapid succession, and it sounds a lot like a drum, or I like to compare it to the sound of your heartbeat in the back of your head. It's a very low sound. This is an index to how the breeding population is doing at that time of year in the forest.
Yeah, this drumming is a breeding ritual that the male rough grouse exhibit, and we see other birds do this wild turkeys spitting and drumming. We see it with prairie chickens, sharp-tailed grouse on their dancing leks. This is a part of their spring breeding behavior. It's a very distinctive sound, and so it's something that your surveyors can go out and they can hear, and then they count the number of drums they have, and then we can measure that against past years. So I kind of summarize that correctly?
Yes, absolutely. You did a very nice job with that, Rob. The drumming is executed by males, and that signals their territory location and also communicates with females about their location when they're ready to begin breeding.
And how many routes do you have out there between the cooperative agencies and the DNR? How many different survey routes are there across the forested portion of the state?
Well, there's well over 100 in routes. This year, 117 were reporting conditions, and so a few more than that were actually done.
And then we've got four regions in the state where we count the number of birds. Tell us about those four regions.
The core of the ruffed grouse range is in the Northeast region, and that is the largest region where most of our routes occur. Then we also have the Northwest region, which has fewer routes, but is also an area where we hold a lot of birds. That would include areas like Red Lake Wildlife Management Area and some of the Agassiz area. And then we have the Central Hardwoods that are further south, and then, of course, the Southeast.
And it's my understanding in the Northwest area this year, which is a fairly small zone compared to the Northeast. I mean, the Northeast is the bread and butter here of this survey. But I want to point out in the Northwest, there were some routes that were not able to get covered this year because you've got some federal agency partners that help out with that. We've heard about the staffing cuts with some of our federal agencies. And so some routes didn't get covered this year. Is that right?
That is correct. We have 8 routes in the Northwest and only 5 of them were surveyed.
Okay, so does that mean you're less confident in the results in the Northwest?
Yes, that is the implication there, is that if you can only do about half of the routes and there aren't that many routes to begin with, that you have less confidence in the findings when your sample's smaller.
Okay, so quick editorial comment. I'm not going to ask you to chime in on this, Charlotte. I don't want to put you in this position, but I want to be very clear with my listeners. The DNR has less confidence in its rough grouse survey here in 2026 as a result of the federal cuts that occurred in Washington, D.C. earlier this year and last year. There are fewer people in the field right now to assist with the grouse survey here in northern Minnesota. So you hunters out there don't have as good of information about the rough grouse on the landscape. I just want to be clear about that. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Treisline. We're talking with Charlotte Roy, the Minnesota DNR's grouse project leader, about the results of the 2026 rough grouse survey here in the state. All right, let's cut to the chase and talk about what the final number was. Overall, we had, 1.7 drums per stop statewide here in Minnesota in 2026. How does that number compare to last year and previous years? What does it mean for the number of birds we've got out there?
Well, 1.7 is very similar to the 1.8 that we had last year. So I think we probably have similar number of birds out there this year as last year, but it is lower than a couple of years ago when the rough grouse cycle peaked statewide. So we're obviously not at peak conditions. We're in the declining phase of the rough grouse cycle, which is a very normal thing for a population that cycles on a 10-year, approximately 10-year cycle. So the birds are in that declining phase at present, but numbers are very similar to last year. I do want to take a moment to just stress that the drumming survey is one piece of several pieces that go into how many birds folks see in the fall. So the drumming survey is conducted in the spring, and the number of birds that hunters see in the fall is related to not just the breeding population, but also production of young birds in the over the course of the summer. So the number of birds that hunters see in the fall is going to be heavily influenced by nest success and chick survival. And if we have very good nest success and chick survival, then there's going to be more young birds in the fall. And most of the birds that are harvested in the fall are young birds. So that's an important piece. People shouldn't put too much stock in just the drumming survey. They need to pay attention to what those conditions are throughout the summer for nest success and chick survival. And the conditions that are important often revolve around how much rainfall we get in June, and when the chicks are young and just hatching, they're vulnerable to heavy rainfall events.
So to your point, in 2024, we had 2.3 drums per stop. So we're down 26% from 2024 into 2026. But if 2024 was a miserable nesting year and this year's a perfect nesting year, you could probably have just as good a hunting this fall as you would have potentially had in 2024. That said, how are breeding conditions shaping up? You know, we're past June. We're well into July, Charlotte. Any estimate on how nesting conditions have been in the Northeast this year so far?
Well, I am just getting some of the first brood reports now, and so they're just kind of trickling in. But I can say that May was very dry throughout most of the state, and June has been wetter than average in a lot of areas. Now, wet conditions are not necessarily bad. It's those really heavy rainfalls that happen when the chicks are young. Like the first 10 days are especially critical because the young birds don't have very good thermoregulatory conditions. So if you see areas that are getting 1-inch rainfalls, those are areas that maybe are going to have a little bit lower chick survival than those areas that miss that kind of heavy precipitation event.
Charlotte, the DNR rough grouse report says that we kill between 200,000 and 500,000 rough grouse annually in Minnesota. That's quite a range. Any idea how, like last year, the past couple of years have shaken out in terms of harvest? And I'm not going to ask you to predict 2026, but if we're in the same ballpark as last year in terms of drums per count, it sounds like it's shaping up as a pretty good nesting year. Any idea where harvest could end up?
Well, thanks for not asking for a number, Rob. But I don't have the numbers from last fall, but I can say that the numbers from the previous year,
335,000 birds. So a pretty solid year.
Yeah, that was a pretty solid year. So good numbers of birds. I can't really predict at this point without knowing how the rest of the summer is going to go. And West Nile virus perhaps could play a role as well. So there's lots of things that I can't foresee. But just using this one piece of information, so far the indication is that the number of breeding birds this spring was comparable to last year.
And a point that I beat to death, Charlotte, is a bad year in Minnesota is a great year just about anywhere else in the lower 48. We have great rough grouse hunting, public lands access here in Minnesota. And you see a lot of non-resident hunters come to Minnesota to chase our rough grouse, don't you?
Absolutely. This is a really excellent place to hunt rough grouse, and we are very lucky here in Minnesota.
Charlotte, I wish I had more time to talk sharptails and some other grouse notes with you. I'll save some of those questions maybe for next year when we get the 2027 survey results. How's that sound?
Looking forward to it, Rob.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining me. Have a great rest of your summer and good luck hunting yourself this fall.
Thank you. You too.
That was Charlotte Roy, DNR Grouse Project Leader. I appreciate her carving out some time for us. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
This July, it's all happening in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevy, is coming to town. 3 days, one place, the biggest names in waterfowl, the latest gear, boats, calls, decoys, and hands-on demos from the pros who live it. Bring the whole family. July 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Iowa Event Center. Tickets and event details are available now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Don't just talk about duck season. Get ready for it.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Retay USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Retay's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RetayUSA.com.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 22 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. MatchingDonors.com.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. Rob Riesline with you. It's our final segment of this week's broadcast. If you like what we discuss here, then you should check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions there, or give us a call at 800-535-5191 to subscribe, again, to print or digital. I got Tim Lesmeister here to help me bring it home this week. Tim, a number of items in the paper we should discuss. One, a fun thing. Did you happen to see the feature I ran about Johnny Horizon? Do you remember the Johnny Horizon thing?
I do remember Johnny Horizon.
1970s?
Mid-70s. You know, I was in my early 20s. I probably thought Johnny Horizon was pretty cool. You know, I mean, there wasn't anybody back then that was really trying to clean up the, you know, forests and the... in the wild areas, and Johnny Horizon was that guy. But it always surprised me that he was a cowboy. That was what always surprised me. Why do they got a cowboy doing this?
I was just a little kid. I was 5-6 years old. You know, when the bicentennial rolled around, I was 6. And my dad worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service at the time. And they had like Clean Up America bags and Johnny Horizon kits. I remember that. And so I was really into the whole thing. And
yeah, Johnny Horizon,
he disappeared.
Oh, yeah, he didn't last that long.
No.
Obviously, he didn't have the longevity, although I thought he caught on pretty good initially. I thought he had a pretty solid beginning. But a very abrupt end.
Did Woodsy Owl replace Johnny Horizon, or were they contemporaries to him? I don't remember the whole give a hoot, don't pollute thing. Did they decide that Woodsy Owl was more kid-friendly? But by 77, 78, Johnny Horizon was way in the rearview mirror.
Gone, just boom, just like that. But, you know, it's tough when you have somebody, Smokey the Bear, he's an animal. He can do no wrong. Woodsy Owl, an animal, can do no wrong. I'm thinking Johnny Horizon, probably fame went to his head. He started gambling, fooling around, drinking too much. Who knows? This was the 70s. He might have got into contraband. Johnny Horizon.
He looked
might
like
have actually had decided rock and roll was a better way to go and never really made it on that scene. I don't know.
He looked like the Marlboro Man. Maybe he pounded too many eaters or something.
That's exactly what happened.
Exactly. Hey, back to something serious here. Mille Lacs harvest. Looks like a little better year on Lake Mille Lacs. There are less forage in the lake. Guys are keeping more walleyes. They're keeping three. It doesn't sound like we're blowing the lid off the quota on Mille Lacs this year. We were at 40% through, I think, most of June. We got this heat, though, that is going to contribute to hooking mortality. I guess maybe the best thing for anglers to do would, you know, give the walleyes a little bit of a break here until the weather cools down again, so at least fish that we catch we're able to keep and not chalk up to hooking mortality.
And you know what's going to happen right now is, and you're right, I think the walleyes are going to get a little break. The transition on Mille Lacs goes from walleyes to the shallow perch and smallmouth bass. You're going to see a lot of bass boats up there now.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister winding down here for another week. A couple stories outside of Minnesota's borders. One that would affect Minnesotans. Missouri, you know, adding new restrictions for non-resident hunters, proposing to add a new non-resident public land deer hunting permit for $165 to hunt on public land. That's presumably in addition to the deer license. And I always love it when we add fees to public lands, which mostly are federal, right? And are paid for by our federal tax dollars. And then the states go and cash in on it. Nonetheless, I mean, there are a lot more non-resident deer hunters down there. I guess 20 years ago, there were about 20,000. And now there's 42,000 non-resident deer hunters. So that percentage-wise has gone up from 4% to 9%. We just can't seem to figure out this non-resident thing. The states just keep saying stick it to them, and we all just keep paying more, don't we?
The key here is that we all keep paying more. I used to hunt my property down in Northeast Iowa, and it got to the point where I just said, I'm not gonna put out that much money for a deer when I can, you know, hunt in the state that I'm a resident in. So it's kind of one of those deals where the only way you'll stop something like this is if it affects the revenue. It's not affecting the revenue. People just say, oh, well, I'm just going to have to pay that. And they do. So it's going to raise more money. I hope they use it for habitat. I hope they use it to, you know, improve the populations of animals that they have down there. And I hope it works out for them. But it's one of those things where you're seeing a lot of states saying, if we're going to raise rates, let's go after the non-residents. Those are the ones that we're going to put the hammer down on.
Missouri is taking public comment on the proposal through August 14th. Just go to the Missouri Department of Conservation website and you can offer your comment there. They're probably going to ignore all the non-resident comments, I'll be honest with you. But nonetheless, they are taking public comment. You can give it a shot. Final topic before we go, Tim, a interesting issue that I've seen out west in a number of national parks and other areas. This is in the Teton Range of northwestern Wyoming, not that far from Minnesota, where they've got some mountain goats running around. They haven't been there that long, but it's almost like the hippo thing down in Colombia. It's amazing how quickly these large mammals can procreate and can create a population in an area where they're not native. It's surprising to me that these goats were not already native there, but they can eat, you know, all the native wildflowers, all the native forbs pretty fast. And the Park Service wants to get rid of them. It's something that probably 10 years ago, they've been working at it. There's still a few kicking around in the Tetons, but there's, you know, kind of a bigger topic here. I've been to some of these national parks. I think the Olympic Peninsula has got the same issue. I don't think they were native there. And you see them and it's like, wow, isn't this cool? This unique mountain alpine animal. And then, you know, the park ranger says, yeah, they really weren't found here. They're from other parts of North America. They got released here and they're causing problems.
Well, they've got signage all around that region that basically says, if you see one of these goats, you let us know because we want to whack it. And the reason they do is because they expand quickly and they do, are much like teenagers. They just want to eat. So the thing is they procreate. They talked about having 18 there and just a few years later, it was already 100 and it just kept expanding exponentially. These are not native to the region and they're very adversely affecting the bighorn sheep. So the sheep are the priority. The goats have got to go. So if you're out there and you see a goat, don't go, oh, that's beautiful. Let's take a picture, make a phone call, and they'll get out there with the choppers and whack it.
The general public has no problem with ugly invasives, right? Whether it's aquatic species, whether it's Asian carp, whether it's European buckthorn. But when you talk about some of these tasty and charismatic animals, whether it's hippos in Colombia, whether it's goats in the Tetons, whether it's mule deer on Catalina Island, or all of New Zealand is just flooded with all sorts of, there was like one native mammal, a bat, I think, on New Zealand. Now they got all these cervidae there that they're trying to control. It gets a little more touchy with the public when we talk about charismatic megafauna, doesn't it?
Oh, doesn't it? Yes, I know. It's something that they see as a beautiful little animal on this wild landscape.
There you go. Well, Tim, thanks for spending a couple seconds with me again. Have a great week ahead, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll catch up to you soon.
That's Tim Lesmesser. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. Everybody, have yourself a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Dreeslein signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.